Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
It's good to be back.
Today we're exploring the Afrin region, looking specifically at its social structure before 2010.
That's right. It's a region also known historically as Kurd-Daw, the Mountain of the Kurds, a place with, well, a lot of history.
Absolutely. And we're drawing on quite a range of sources, academic work, historical texts, ethnographic studies.
Yeah, trying to piece together that complex tapestry of life in Afrin before the Syrian civil war really changed things.
Our goal is really to uncover the key elements that, you know, defined the region back then.
So where should we start? Tribal structures seem pretty central.
Definitely. That's a huge part of the story. But it's interesting. Some sources suggest these structures were already weakening, maybe by the French Mandate period.
Right. That's one perspective. But then you have these detailed local histories, ethnographic accounts.
Like Dr. Muhammad Abdo Ali's work.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And they paint a rather different picture. They really emphasize the continued importance of specific tribes.
And their leaders, the Agas.
Yes, the Agas. Their power, their territories, their involvement in local politics, social events. Right up to 2010. It seems lineage and local power remained quite strong.
Okay, so that's one major thread. We also need to look at the ethnic makeup.
Overwhelmingly Kurdish is how it's usually described, though not exclusively.
Right. There were small, established Arab and Turkmen minorities, too.
And connecting that to religion, it was mainly Muslim, but with this really interesting Sufi-influenced Kurdish Islam.
Which contributed to a reputation for tolerance alongside significant Yazidi and Alevi communities.
Yeah, quite a diverse religious landscape, actually. We should unpack that Kurdish Islam aspect a bit more later.
Good idea. And finally, the economy. Olives.
Olives are key.
Yep.
Afrin and olives, they go hand in hand. But that also brings up land tenure.
How the land was owned and controlled.
Exactly. The influence of those Aga families again, and also how Syrian state policies shaped people's livelihoods.
Okay, lots to cover. Let's start with the basics. The region itself before 2010, geography, history, set the scene.
All right. Geographically, we're talking northwestern Syria, part of the Aleppo Governorate, right up against the Turkish border.
And the name Kurd-Daw. Mountain of the Kurds.
That's the historical local name.
Mm-hmm.
The name Afrin or Ephrens likely comes from the ancient Roman name Euphrenus.
And the landscape itself, I picture mountains.
There's definitely mountainous terrain, but also rolling hills and these really fertile valleys, especially along the Afrin River.
Which explains the agriculture.
Absolutely. Very rich agricultural land, perfect for olives, as we mentioned.
What about its deeper history, its significance over time?
Oh, it goes way back. We're talking evidence of Neolithic settlements. It was part of Roman Syria.
And various empires after that.
Yeah, incorporated into the Ottoman Empire, part of the Vilayet of Aleppo. What's really striking is the argument for a continuous Kurdish presence, potentially since antiquity.
Since antiquity, wow.
Scholars like René Dussade suggested it. Stefan Spurl even pushes it back maybe to the Seleucid era. Certainly by the Crusades, late 11th century, it was known as a Kurdish inhabited area.
So a very long Kurdish history there. And that unique Kurdish Islam you mentioned.
Yes, the Sufi influence seems key here. It fostered a kind of Islam noted for, well, a relative degree of tolerance. Fewer mosques per capita, apparently, than other areas.
Interesting. And the town of Afrin itself?
It really grew as a market center in the 19th century. Then its growth picked up speed under the French mandate, especially after that Syria-Turkey border was formalized in 1923.
Okay, that gives us a good grounding. Let's circle back to those tribal structures. You said they were fundamental.
Historically, yes. Across Kurdish society, including Syria, based on patrilineal descent, lineages, clans, sometimes forming larger confederations, important social political units.
But the sources disagree on how strong they remained in Afrin leading up to 2010.
That's the crux of it, yeah. You have Roger Leska writing back in the 1930s.
What did he say?
He suggested that tribal identities in Kurd-Daw had become quite weak after the French arrived, that they weren't really relevant for formal organization anymore.
So he thought they were fading out.
That seems to be his assessment. But then, contrast that with the local histories, the ethnographic work, Dr. Ali's research again.
And that shows.
Much more continuity. Continued importance of specific tribes, the Agas, their land, their role in local events, politics, right up to 2010.
So how do we square that? Liska focusing on formal structures, maybe, while Ali captured the informal power.
That's a very plausible explanation. Maybe the formal state structures were replacing some tribal political functions, but the social and economic influence of lineage in the Agas persisted locally.
Makes sense. The Ottomans actually strengthened the Agas sometimes, didn't they?
They did. They often engaged with tribal structures, gave Agas titles, responsibilities, integrated them into the administration as a means of control.
And that influence carried over post-Ottoman.
Definitely. Especially linked to land ownership, which became increasingly important for Aga power.
So even if the big confederations weren't running the show politically at a national level.
Exactly. On the ground, in Afrin, tribal identity, family ties, the sway of these Aga families, it all still mattered a great deal for social status, local economics, community life.
The decline of broad political autonomy versus the endurance of local lineage-based power.
Precisely. And the fact that people kept detailed genealogies, tribal histories, that tells you it still meant something to them.
Okay, that clarifies the tribal aspect. Let's talk demographics. Who lived there?
As we said, overwhelmingly Kurdish. Estimates run from 90 to 97% Kurdish before the war.
And the population size?
The 2004 Syrian census put it around 200,000, but crucially, that census didn't record ethnicity.
Which reflects Ba'ath's state policy, of course.
Of course. And compared to Jazeera or Kobani, Afrin saw less intense Arabization efforts.
Less state-sponsored settlement of Arab tribes.
There was some, yes, particularly during the United Arab Republic time with Egypt. Yep. Tribes like Amarat and Bubana were settled, but not on the scale seen elsewhere. The Kurdish identity remained very strong.
But not entirely homogenous. You mentioned small Arab and Turkmen minorities.
Yes. Established communities, often in specific villages, like Merriman mentioned, for Turkmen. And Arab clans like Al-Bubana and Al-Amerat with historical links to Manbi.
So a predominantly Kurdish region, but with these long-standing minorities woven in.
Exactly. That coexistence is part of Afrin's specific social character. The sources suggest they were integrated to a degree, though we'd need more detail to understand the full dynamics.
Now, the religious landscape, predominantly Muslim, Sunni.
Mostly Sunni, yes. The Hanafi school was common among tribes like Shikak and Rashwan. But that Sufi influence is key to understanding the local flavor.
The Kurdish Islam idea? More tolerant, fewer mosques.
That's the picture painted. Fewer formal religious institutions compared to population size, perhaps, but vibrant Sufi networks and practices.
And the significant minorities, the Yazidis.
Afrin was a major center for Yazidis in Syria, a historical heartland. Population estimates vary wildly from 5,000 up to maybe 30,000 before 2011.
That's a wide range.
It is. Official numbers are hard to come by. But their roots there are ancient, possibly Median era. They're considered indigenous to the region.
And they lived in specific areas.
Historically, many villages. By 2018, they were concentrated in about 23 villages, mainly in the Shira, Shirawa, and Jindara sub-districts, plus Afrin City, often clustered together, especially in eastern and southern Afrin.
Do they have a distinct social structure?
Very distinct. Hereditary religious castes. Sheikhs, Pirs, and the lay Murids. A religious hierarchy headed by the Mir of Sheikhan and the Babi Sheikhs. Strict endogamy is also a key feature.
And their relationship with the Kurdish identity.
They overwhelmingly speak Kurmanji Kurdish and share ethnic ties. But they maintain a very distinct religious identity. Some prefer to identify as a separate ethno-religious group altogether.
Were they officially recognized?
No, not before 2011. Under Syrian law, they were often legally considered Muslim, subject to Islamic personal status laws, leading to significant marginalization.
What about the Alevi community?
Also a notable presence. And, interestingly, Kurdish-speaking Alevis, possibly the only such community in Syria. Their roots are in mystical Islam, Sufism, with a reverence for Ali, but distinct from mainstream Shia or Sunni Islam.
Different from Turkish Alevism, too.
Potentially, yes. Maybe different figures emphasized, perhaps stronger links to older beliefs, nature veneration. Some sources suggest connections to Yarsinism or Yazidism.
How did they come to be in Afrin?
Mostly through migration from Anatolia over centuries, often fleeing persecution. There was a significant influx after the Dersim events in Turkey in the late 1930s. Dr. Nuri Dursimi, a key figure, found refuge there.
And they settled in a specific area?
Mainly concentrated in the Maabatli, or Mabata, sub-district. Population estimates again vary, maybe a few thousand up to 15,000, though the lower end seems more likely.
How are they organized socially?
They have hereditary sacred lineages called Okaks. Religious leaders, Beads, Pirs, Murshids come from specific Okaksayid families. Lay members are called Tali.
And their practices?
Communal worship, called Sema, held in a Semevi, often involving music and dance. There's a strong emphasis on moral norms rather than Orthodox rituals. Gender equality is often highlighted as well.
Did they play a role in local politics?
They did. Figures like Muhammad Ali Khoja, one of the founders of the first Kurdish Democratic Party in Syria, came from the Alevi community.
So a really diverse mix. Let's look at how these social structures evolved under different rulers. Ottomans first.
Right. Afrin was part of the Ottoman Vilayet of Aleppo from 1516. The Ottomans definitely interacted with the Kurdish tribes. The Reshwan, the Milli Confederation, were big players in northern Syria.
How did they interact?
Often through co-option, appointing tribal leaders to positions, granting titles like Aga, Beik, Pasha, integrating them into the administration for tax collection, military levies.
Using the existing power structures.
Exactly. The Kurdish Jambalat dynasty even governed Aleppo for a time in the early 17th century. But this system could also reinforce exploitative local power dynamics.
Then came the French Mandate around 1920.
Yes. Afrin became part of French-administered Syria. And this is where that debate about tribal weakening really comes into focus.
Formal political structures weakening, perhaps, but local agas still influential.
That seems to be the dynamic. Kurdish political figures from Afrin, like Nuri Khanj or Hasan Al-Uni, engaged with the mandate authorities. Sometimes they leveraged tribal connections, sometimes connections with movements like the Meridia.
Did the French try to manipulate tribal politics?
Oh, certainly. Exploiting divisions, supporting certain factions. That was standard practice. Some tribes resisted, like the Amkan and Shaykhan. Others accommodated.
And the Agas became even more prominent locally.
It seemed so. They were the local elite right up to 2010. Their power was this mix of lineage, land ownership, and personal influence. As formal tribal political structures maybe receded under state centralization, these Agas consolidated their positions.
Owning large tracts of land.
Yes. Acquiring vast areas, sometimes entire villages, establishing quasi-feudal relationships. Families like Al-Khanj, Al-Haj Omar, Al-Sheikh Ismail Zadeh, Jalusi, Diko, El-Gabari, Omar Safuna, Sado Mimi. These names keep coming up.
And their wealth came mainly from
agriculture, especially those lucrative olive groves. Control over land meant economic wealth, which translated into social prestige and power.
What role did they play in the community?
They were often mediators in disputes, represented community interests to the authorities, played roles in political mobilization. It marks a shift, perhaps, from broader tribal leadership to Aga dominance based more on land and personal influence, leading to greater social stratification.
But then the Syrian state stepped in after independence.
Yes, and the Ba'athist state particularly pushed Arab nationalist policies. This often meant discrimination against Kurds, suppressing language, culture, denying citizenship, though Afrin was less affected by statelessness than Jazeera, and Arabization policies we met.
And land reforms.
Crucially, yes. Starting in the late 1950s, agricultural reform laws aimed specifically at breaking the power of large landowners, including Kurdish agas.
Setting limits on ownership, redistributing land.
Exactly. This directly challenged the economic foundation of aga power. It led to a decline in that feudal-like system, sparked social transformations.
Did the agas lose all influence?
Not necessarily their social prestige, but their economic dominance was certainly curtailed. It maybe paved the way for new social classes, new forms of political organization to emerge.
And state policies like Decree 49.
That created bureaucratic nightmares for land ownership, particularly in border regions like Afrin. Another layer of state control impacting local lives.
Oh, Hannah, the chai lady is here. Roj Bosh, Hannah.
Ah, perfect timing. Roj Bosh.
Oh, this smells fantastic today. It's got that really nice cardamom aroma. Yeah, just the right amount of sweetness.
Definitely. Not bitter at all today. Sometimes it needs a bit more sugar, but this is spot on.
Hannah, you've outdone yourself today. Roj Bosh. Okay, we needed that little boost. Where were we?
We were about to get into the specifics of the major Kurdish tribes and their prominent families before 2010.
Right. This is where it gets really detailed in the sources. It sounds like a complex tribal map.
It is. Very intricate. Several major tribes, each with its own history, territory, leadership. The Amkan, for instance.
Tell me about them.
Considered one of the oldest, largest. Based around Jabal Hawar, Sheikh al-Hadid area. Known for preserving their identity, resisting the French and Turkish Kemalists. Key families include Ayhuka, Diko, Alimar.
So quite active politically.
Yes, and active in the Kurdish national movement. They often allied with the Beyan against the Shaykhan tribe. It shows that interplay between lineage and shifting political alliances.
What about the Shikak? You mentioned them earlier.
A large tribe with connections across the border in Turkey and Iran. Simcoe Aga Shikak is a famous figure. In Afrin, they were mainly in the Shiran district. The Jalusi family was prominent there.
How were their relations with others?
Historically strained with the Ottomans, but friendly with the Rashwan. Interestingly, the Jalusi leadership was quite hostile to that Meridia movement we keep mentioning.
And the Rashwan, also a big name.
A huge confederation, originally nomadic pastoralists. In Afrin, they settled around the Joma Plain and Jabal Elun. The Alhaj Omar family was powerful for centuries. Led Kurd Dag back in the 18th century resisted the French.
Any other key families from the Rashwan?
The Bian branch, led by the Afshig Ismail Zadeh family, became very important politically, but they clashed significantly with Meridia.
Okay, and the Sheikh Han, you said they were maybe the largest within Afrin.
Often considered so, yeah. Dominated the Raju district. They also had a long history of leading Kurd Dag. Known for resisting the French, but unlike the Bian or Shikak leadership, they were generally sympathetic to the Meridia. Several prominent families shared leadership.
It really seems the Meridia movement is a key divider or aligner here. What about the Milan?
Another major confederation, several branches in Afrin. The Mili Dawoodi, around the Joma Plain, led by the Omar Safuna family, they opposed the French and supported the Mirids. Then you had the Alkanj family in Basuta, more feudal, and the Jaquali, influential in the 19th century.
It's a lot to keep track of. Any other major tribes?
Definitely mention the Rabari Riverine, settled along the Joma Plain and Jabal Lilan. They fought the French, engaged with the Meridia. The Al-Gabari family was key there.
Okay.
The Dan are interesting. Originally Yazidi, mostly converted to Islam later, powerful in the 19th centuries. And the Qajar, unique because they were nomadic pastoralists until borders forced them to settle around the 1940s.
And smaller groups.
Yes, numerous other significant families and smaller tribal entities. Hmm. The Battle family in Basuta, Alamo, Saidomimi, each holding local influence. It's a dense network.
So with all these tribes and families, how did they actually get along, intertribal relations?
It was complex, a rich mix. You had networks of alliance, of course.
How were those formed?
Marriage was a classic way, cementing ties between families, like Shikak and Rashwan, or expanding influence like the Al-Sheikh Ismail Zadeh did. Political alignments shifted based on shared interest fighting the French, for example.
Local power struggles, too. Alliances against dominant tribes.
Absolutely. We see mentions of the Danann allying with the Battle Aga, or the Amkhan and Bian against the Sheikh Han, and presumably economic cooperation, though the sources are less detailed on that.
But it wasn't all cooperation, I assume. What about conflict?
Oh, plenty of conflict. Disputes over land, water, political dominance, historical feuds. It was all part of the picture.
Any specific examples?
That antagonism between the Sheikh Han and the Bian Rashwan alliance seems persistent. Internal conflicts within tribes, too. Like within the Sheikh Han, specific clashes mentioned include Rabari versus Alkanj, Mili Dawoodi versus Alkanj.
And the Meridia movement again?
Yes, it became a massive source of conflict, cutting across tribal lines. You had adherents versus resisting Aga families. It led to violent clashes, sieges, even assassinations.
How did outside powers influence these dynamics? Ottomans, French.
They actively intervened. Classic divide and rule. The Ottoman governor reportedly instigated a conflict between Shikak branches. The French definitely played factions against each other.
And the drawing of borders.
Huge impact. The Syria-Turkey border split tribal lands, cut off kinship networks, especially for groups like the Shikak. It forced nomadic groups like the Qajar to settle. Resistance against external powers sometimes brought unity, but it also revealed internal fault lines.
Okay, we absolutely have to focus on this Meridia movement now. It sounds like a pivotal event.
It really was. A socio-religious movement, mainly in the 1930s and 40s, but with a long shadow. It seems to have been a very local Afrin phenomenon.
What was its nature? Religious? Political?
Both, really. It had religious undertones, maybe Sufi-influenced, but it became a vehicle for popular grievances against the French mandate and against the established Kurdish Aga class. It challenged the existing power structures.
And it cut across tribal lines, you said.
Yes, that's key. It mobilized people based on shared religious feeling or socio-political frustration rather than just traditional tribal loyalty. One source says it tore apart remaining tribal ties.
How did different tribes react? You mentioned Sheikh Han sympathy.
Considerable sympathy among the Sheikh Han, yes. It fueled their anti-French resistance. A prominent Murid leader, Musa Aga, was from the Sheikh Han.
And the Bian.
Strong opposition. Violent conflict. Jafar Aga Sheikh Ismail Zadeh, a Bian leader, was assassinated in a Murid ambush in 1939.
What about the Shikak?
A divided response. The traditional Jalousie Aga leadership was hostile. The general population may be mixed. Some Sufi sheikhs apparently supported it. There are reports Mirids besieged a Yazidi Shikak village and killed a local leader.
So really divisive. Other tribes.
The Emkan leadership generally opposed it, possibly due to their alliance with the anti-Mirid BM. The Mili Doti supported it ideologically, but stayed out of the fighting. Rashwan were mixed. Rabari engaged with
them. How did it end?
The armed activities continued until 1939, when the French military, using air power, suppressed it quite forcefully. Many Mirids and their families fled to Turkey, returning later under an amnesty.
So a short-lived but intense movement.
Intense and transformative. It fundamentally challenged the traditional authorities, forged new loyalties, and created deep, often violent divisions that likely resonated for years. It really shows the tension between established power and popular movements.
A fascinating, if turbulent, period. Let's shift to the economic foundations. How did people make a living?
Primarily agriculture, as we've touched upon.
Mm-hmm.
And the absolute cornerstone was olive cultivation.
From little olives.
Pretty much. Vast groves. Estimates range from 14 to 18 million trees before the war, some centuries old. It was the main economic activity for, well, maybe 75% of the population before 2011.
Was the olive oil famous?
Very well regarded. Supplied Aleppo. It was crucial for the famous Aleppo soap industry. Generated significant income for the region, tens of millions of dollars annually pre-war.
That reliance must have shaped society.
Absolutely. It provided a relatively stable, long-term agricultural base.
And land tenure. How was the olive land owned?
This is where the Agas come back in strongly. Historically, up to the mid-20th century, ownership of the best land, the olive groves, was heavily concentrated in the hands of those Aga families.
Creating that feudal-like system you mentioned?
Yes. Agas, as landlords, the majority as peasants or tenant farmers. Families like Alkanj, Saido Mimi are explicitly called feudal in some sources.
But the land reforms changed that.
They aimed to. Post-independence, especially under the Baathists, the reforms set ownership ceilings and redistributed land. It definitely weakened the economic dominance of many Aga families, even if they kept social prestige. It was a major social shift.
Did state policies affect land in other ways?
Yes, sometimes facilitating settlement of non-Kurdish groups onto Afrin lands. And Decree 49, making land registration difficult in border areas, added another layer of complexity and state control.
Were there other economic activities besides olives?
Olives were dominant, but yes, some tribes, like Rashwan, had pastoralist roots. The Qajar were nomadic pastoralists until the 1940s border changes forced them to settle.
Any other income sources?
Labor migration was important, too. People traveling to Aleppo for manual labor, especially outside the olive harvest season, to supplement household incomes. So a mixed picture, but agriculture, specifically olives, was the heart of it.
It really sounds like Afrin before 2010 was this intricate mosaic, deep history, complex tribal structures adapting, religious diversity, all tied to the olive economy.
Exactly. You have this interplay of ancient tribal lineage, the power of the Aga families evolving, the influence of different religious communities, Yazidi, Alevi, that's specific Kurdish Islam, and then the impact of the modern Syrian state and movements like the Muridia stirring the pot.
A really fascinating mix of continuity and change.
And that deep connection to the land through the olives, providing that economic backbone through generations.
Understanding all this history, the social fabric from before 2010, feels absolutely crucial for making sense of what's happened since.
It is. The transformations Afrin has undergone since the Syrian civil war started have profoundly impacted everything we've discussed today. That pre-war context is the essential baseline.
We definitely encourage you, the listener, to explore the sources we've drawn on. There's so much more detail there about this complex and historically rich region.
What aspects of Afrin's pre-2010 society stand out most to you after hearing this? What questions does it leave you with about the region's present and indeed its future? Something to think about.